Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Well, here's a story that turned out to be far more than we'd bargained for. You may have seen or heard MP Craig Kelly's comments recently. He's a government backbencher with a conservative view about climate change, and also the chairman of the Coalition's Backbench Policy Committee on Climate. He wanted to take a swipe at alternative energy, and here's what he said.
I know this is something we really can't make light of, because it is true. People will die this winter because of the policies that we have to subsidise renewable energy.
Well, the media jumped on him. Why? Well, they wanted to make a story about Conservative MP goes over the top by linking alternative energy to deaths. But the truth of the matter is this. If people don't use their heating and cooling in extreme temperatures, death rates do go up. I'm not defending Craig Kelly. His comments were a bit over the top, but they did touch on a legitimate issue. Beyond the bump and grind of daily name-calling politics, we wanted to go behind that story and look at the facts. Professor Adrian Barnett from QUT's Institute of Health and Biomedical Innovation Centre says Australians are not good at protecting themselves in the cold winter, we don't wear the right sort of clothes, and our homes are often not well insulated. And you'll be surprised at the death rates in some of our warmer parts. I began by asking Professor Barnett, what's the medical link between colder temperatures and cardiovascular disease?
There's a couple of different mechanisms. I think the most important one is via blood pressure. So, you know, when you go cold, you go pale, that's your blood vessel shrinking below the skin. To try and keep your internal system warm. That does two things. It shrinks your blood vessels, so that increases your blood pressure. And shrinking your blood vessels, if you've got a partial blockage in there that you're maybe not aware of, that can be a great way to find it. It also, for want of a better technical word, does make your blood a bit sludgier. Our blood gets a little bit sludgier in winter. And then there is a third potential mechanism, which is quite interesting, in that people don't sleep as well during. If it's cold, it is harder to sleep well.
Is it core temperature that we need to be worried about then?
It's actually too difficult to say. Yeah, you have your skin temperature and the air temperature too. So yeah, the skin temperature you can protect yourself by wearing clothes, but the air temperature that you breathe in, and of course if you think of where your lungs are, they're right next to your heart. So if you're breathing in that cold air, it's actually very close to all your internal organs anyway. So the only way to fix that is by internally heating your house. And certainly for the evidence we have at the moment, all the best trials we have been on improving the insulation of the house and heating the house. They're the ones that have really shown a good effect. It could be that wearing clothes does also help, and all the logic points towards that helping. But we don't have any sort of large, well-done trials that show that yet.
Leaving aside the whole politics of what Craig Kelly said, it is true, isn't it, that in colder weather, people do die?
Yeah, in colder weather, people die, and that's seen around the world, but it's a much worse problem, would you believe, in warm countries like Australia. So we see in Europe, say, for example, countries like Greece and Italy have a huge problem in winter, whereas the Scandinavian countries like Norway and Sweden have absolutely no increased risk. And we see a similar pattern in the USA, where states like the warm states like California and Florida have a huge winter increase in deaths, whereas the cold states like the Dakotas have absolutely no increase. And the most logical explanation is that those people who live in cold countries are simply well equipped to deal with it. They have good homes and they have good clothes and they know they respect the cold. Whereas here in Australia, our houses are pretty flimsy, we don't have warm clothes, and we expose ourselves to much colder temperatures than people from Scandinavia would do.
I did see some research commented on somewhere where someone had said, look, Australian houses may as well be tents in the winter. Was that you?
That was me, yeah. I call them glorified tents, mostly because you see them being moved around here in Queensland, which really shocked me when I first arrived here, that they're that insubstantial that it's easy to move them. But also because we've done research where we've put a little temperature monitor inside people's homes to track the temperature, and in so many houses, the indoor temperature really just tracks the outdoor temperature, but it's just a couple of degrees warmer. So our houses keep the rain off us, but they're not protecting us at all from the temperature.
I imagine that the Queensland design that you've spoken about is particularly not good for cold weather.
Exactly. It's all designed for heat. So it's, you know, it's on stilts to let the air flow through with lots of windows. And that is great in summer. You know, you get that natural air conditioning. But all those design features actually make it terrible in winter because then all the cold air just gets in.
So for that reason, and surprisingly, Brisbane and other parts north, the death rate due to cold weather, cold snaps, is what, comparable to southern states?
It were pretty much the same. The results from Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney, which are the three cities in that major study, yeah, they all have this same very U-shaped risk in temperature. That we like it when it's about 25 degrees, and when it gets warmer than that, we die, and when it gets colder than that, we die. We're actually, as a population, we're very fragile.
At the serious end, that makes us a lot more vulnerable to a couple of things. I would have thought big swings in temperature, which many attribute to climate variability, and secondly, to changes in electricity pricing, because it's simply true that if you're not set up, you know, wanting to heat your house a lot because you're trying to save money, then when you actually need it, it won't be there.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the UK, they kind of addressed this. What they did was they triggered a payment for people who are vulnerable. So if you were elderly and it was colder than a certain temperature for 3 days in a row, you were given £50 to encourage you to turn your heating on and save lives. So, yeah, you know, we could consider doing something here where those people who are vulnerable get a bit of a discount on their electricity, and I'd say that would be useful in the cold and also in the heat when we need people to turn on their air conditioners, because that's a great way to avoid heat-related illnesses.
Professor, do you see other public policy implications that come from this?
The one thing that works, again, and it works in cold weather and it works in hot weather, is insulation. But we, you know, there was that insulation scheme that I thought was a great scheme, you know, that it was a terrible tragedy that people died, and then it just became a huge political football and nobody's been able to touch insulation since. But we have fantastic randomised trials from around the world showing that insulation keeps people warm and helps them stay healthy.
Global warming, climate variability, as that becomes such a political football, and indeed Craig Kelly's comments were aimed at having a swipe at that whole thing, and that just goes to show the nature of this being so politically hot at the moment, does it actually get in the way of us doing things that are important to do for the most vulnerable, in particular the elderly, people in houses that aren't insulated, people who are on the breadline?
I think so, yeah. I mean, this is a big problem we've got. I mean, the Lancet, which is one of our best medical journals, have called climate change the biggest threat to our health. And it really needs serious long-term planning. We need to plan our cities better. We know that people who live in inner cities, for example, you know, they're much more vulnerable to hot weather because of this thing called the urban heat island effect. Parts of our city which are closer and where there's a lot of concrete and where it's all dense and there's not much air and wind that gets through, on hot days, those parts of the city are actually much hotter. And so we've seen from studies in Australia and around the world, they're the areas that have the biggest problems with, you know, emergency admissions to hospital on very hot days. So the way we structure our cities and the way we structure our houses, yeah, is very important for protecting us from the weather. And it's expensive to change. I mean, insulating people's homes and changing homes and changing the way streets are designed, planting more trees, all these things are expensive. And who wants to pay for them when it's a lot of it is preventative medicine, which politicians don't often get behind.
Well, I would say that we're not going to be thanking those politicians for standing in the way of good public health measures, good public policy measures, if in years to come we look back and say, for goodness sake, the death rate due to the cold went up, while all they did was argue about whether it was man-induced or another form of climate change, but climate change nonetheless it was.
Yeah, but well, look, we've known about this winter increase in deaths for a long time.
We have.
It's been well established in Australia since the early 90s. It still happens every year. So I've been talking about it for many years and I kind of feel like I'm at the stage of giving up, to be honest. I haven't seen any real movement. There is a trial going on in Victoria soon about using insulation. So that's some kind of positive, and I certainly do see, I've heard people talk about, you know, new building standards, but that's just for new homes. It's really the current housing stock that's the problem. But fixing that is very expensive, and I think, unfortunately, yeah, there are other priorities at the moment.
Well, I sure hope that you're not despondent. I hope that the fact that we've called you to talk about it tonight is at least encouraging to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've done a lot of research in this area, and you know, I get contacted when it's very hot or when it's very cold, and it becomes an issue. It becomes an issue in those times. But really, it would be good if we, you know, in one of the most temperate, in spring or autumn, we sat down with everybody and talked about this, because it happens every year and it blows up and seems to become an issue for a short while. But actually, I mean, what that big paper from The Lancet showed was it wasn't actually, both at the hot end and the cold end, it wasn't actually the extreme days that were the worst in terms of public health. What were actually the worst were the moderate cold days and the moderate heat days. And they're not as risky to the individual, but there's far more of them. So one thing I do worry about with making this a big issue on the hottest and the coldest days is that the public seem to get the message that it's only those days that are dangerous, and that's just not true at all.
So what is it that we need to be concerned about? What are the risk factors that we ought to watch? And indeed, what, apart from rushing out to insulate our house, what ought we be doing? And in particular, what ought we be encouraging our older friends and relatives to do?
I suppose the people to look to are really the Scandinavians, because they have, you know, it gets down to minus 10 there regularly, but yet they have almost no winter increase in cardiovascular disease. And what they do is they have very good clothing, and they wear that clothing when they go outside. Their houses are well built and well insulated, and they keep it a sort of cozy 20 degrees all year round. But also, very interestingly, they keep themselves active in winter. So I'd encourage people to do that too. It's not a case of just hibernating and hiding yourself away. Keep up your physical activity, keep yourself warm, and you should feel better.